Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell & Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio, and together partners at Amity Kett. This podcast session, we are going to talk about the design process. So once you have hired us, we're going to talk about how the process goes, starting from the beginning to the end.
I would love to share a little thing that came up actually this morning with a client that's very common. Had a conversation with a client who begins telling me they found my name as an interior designer and they want some design help. And it relates to a renovation and some decorating. So it's some furniture, it's a new kitchen, a new bathroom, etc. And then about 10 minutes into the conversation, they add on that they want to put a second story on the home. And that very quickly switches the conversation from an interior design conversation, which of course I know how to have, to an architecture conversation and kind of figuring out how to shift the client over to starting with an architectural kind of master plan for their project. So just as a note, in early days when people contact me as the interiors person, I have to discern through the conversations with them what it is that they really need. And sometimes it moves to architecture as part of that need.
Right, because architecture would be the first part. So when you first start a project, let's say it's a brand new house, the first thing you're going to do is meet with the architect on the site and determine orientations, views, vehicle access, if there's any big trees we want to try and work around, all of those kinds of things. So if it's something like an addition or remodel, and so like as Amity said, they meet to talk about all the stuff they want done in the existing house, and then they say, oh, and I want to add on. Well, then you need to go back to the architect and start with that plan first, and then interiors follow shortly after that.
Yeah, so we do collaborate early on. It's very important to have both an architect and an interior designer on your projects as early as possible. But typically, if there is architecture required, the interior designer collaborates, but also just hangs back and kind of waits for the architect and the client to work out the kind of master plan for the site, as Diane's mentioning. And then it gets passed over to the interior designer a little later in the process.
Yeah. So then we would start developing floor plans, and then with interior designers on board at that time, we get their opinion. They might say, oh, you need to make this room just a little bit bigger because in talking to the homeowner, they wanted two sofas back to back or two sitting areas, or they, you know, really wanted to make sure they had a game table. So we kind of do things like that. Because sometimes there's things that they might tell you that they didn't tell me. And then there's things they tell me they didn't tell you. And
yeah. I actually just had this conversation this morning with an architect. I was mentioning that sometimes clients come to us after having been with an architect and they haven't shared some very important information because they don't know that they need to, such as I've got this Victorian bed that my mother-in-law gave me and it has to fit into this room, or I purchased the sectional and I love it and I want it to come with me. And because they didn't share that information with the architect, we end up having to go back and say, oh, did you know this? It's just, you know, sometimes clients don't know what they need to share with each member of the party. So we try to guide them through that. We ask questions early on. But, you know, we miss things. Sometimes we have to reconnoiter and go back and say, hey, architect, this room, the proportions of this room aren't going to fit whatever it is the client wants to achieve within that space. And so then there's a little bit of redesign. So when sometimes clients ask us, is there an overlap for what you do and what an architect does? The answer is a little bit of an overlap. You're not really hiring us both for the exact same thing, but there is a moment where those two things kind of bump up against each other, a furniture layout, a finished material, and a connection to the rest of the space that needs a little bit of rethink, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then kind of after we get the plan done, then we work on the exterior elevations and we'll do a 3D computer model so you can really see what it looks like. Usually you know, Amity or an interior designer isn't quite as involved in that, but we definitely like to always keep you in the loop as to what things are looking like. And then kind of once we go from there, then we start working on the inside more, which then definitely you're a lot heavier handed in that part, whereas we're a little less because then we're coordinating with the structural engineer and working out construction details and then starting to get ready for permitting and working with city officials and Amity at that time. Then while we're doing all that, she can be working with you on figuring out all the interiors. And we do also help with drawing cabinet elevations and getting the power and lighting plans updated. But definitely Amity is more involved at that point and then has a whole lot of other meetings with you.
Yeah. So when we get involved, we often start, first of all, we'll start with what you've come to the table with as far as what you and your architect have worked out as far as the plan, whether it's a new house or a renovation or addition. We kind of get up to speed with where we are, where you are in that process. What are the important things you've shared with the architect? What do we need to know? And then we begin kind of taking your ideas in hand and helping develop what the interior of the space is going to feel like with inspirations, just general design ideas. Maybe there's something that jumps out at us that's going to be a bit of a challenge in the space, whether it's a staircase or an accent wall in an entrance hall, or maybe a connection to the kitchen that we see as going to be a challenge, beautiful architecturally, but might be a challenge to furnish. So we start having those conversations, kind of diagnose where we can be of help and what areas really need to be talked through and thought through more carefully. Another juncture, another place where interior design and architecture is really important to be on the same page is at windows and talking about window treatments and the way that once you move into this beautiful new space, the way that you cover those windows, whether it be shutters or shades or curtain panels or nothing at all, at the very least, you want to have that conversation early on because if, for instance, your window faces a street light or a neighbor's backyard and they keep their lights on all night, you may want to think about how that window gets treated. And sometimes those solutions are architectural.
So Amity, when you first meet with them and go through their inspiration pictures, and then you all kind of take a couple weeks, right, to start picking selections of finishes?
Yeah, it can take about, usually we say about 4 weeks to kind of go through that diagnosing process and getting to know you and understanding the space and the ins and outs of your unique project, all working towards one of those fabulous design presentations where we give you solutions and selections, maybe countertop, flooring. We take the inspiration images that you've shared. We take our ideas. We sort of fold in what the architects brought to the table and the ideas that they've given and the level they've taken it to. And we try to digest all that and bring it back to you in a format that both inspires and meets a budget if there is one, if we know what that investment you're going to make is. And is in keeping with the existing architecture of the space. So that's a really fun moment for people.
Yeah. And so those meetings can be really long. So you usually try not to do the whole house at one time, right?
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. I do think that there have been times where some of my staff wants to kill themselves or me at the end of one of our presentations when we've had to do an entire house at one time, which, you know, it's one of those challenges in what we do because the client wants to understand what the whole house is going to feel and look like at the same time, but they don't necessarily have the bandwidth to go through each area. So trying to make that digestible is a really important part of what we do.
Well, and so it might be broken up into a couple meetings.
Yeah, right? There'll be sort of maybe we focus on master bedroom and kitchen, maybe a powder room or an entrance hall, some important dramatic moment. Maybe it's a fireplace wall. And the materials that will be incorporated there. And then that leads us to the secondary areas, the upstairs or the kids' bathrooms or the screen porch, whatever those other decisions are, kind of get led by those initial pass.
Mm-hmm. And then lighting, that's a whole nother
thing. Yeah, I think next is lighting and plumbing and appliances. So plumbing and appliances is a really important thing. So after we've landed the finishes and we know what all of those materials are going to be, we talk about plumbing, fixtures, and fittings the client might want. And, sometimes those finishes help us make those decisions, because if we've chosen a beautiful calicata gold marble, that's going to look really beautiful with polished nickel or a brass faucet. So we need to know what we're putting in the space before we pick out the jewelry for it, the lighting and the plumbing.
And a lot of times you go to the showroom, right, to do that?
Yeah, we go to the showroom and we sort of touch and feel, walk through with the client, talk about their priorities, take a look at all the different plumbing and appliance options. And actually, sometimes it's a better idea to do those meetings in two chunks, because it can be a lot for the client to take on.
They're sitting in tubs, sitting on toilets.
There's a lot of sitting on toilets, a couple toilets that say hi to you when you walk by that we always see. And sometimes we're surprised by what the client falls in love with. They've made some decisions and then they see, a really large, great tub that is going to be perfect for the space. And that takes a little bit of redesign, right, Diane?
Yes, definitely.
We come back and say, hey, Diane, they just chose this tub. Now you got to make the stairs wider.
Well, so they pick the tub and then the faucet and where that faucet has to go. And do we have enough space based on placement of the tub within that room, door swings, windows, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it starts to get, it's kind of, we start on this big overall picture and we just keep getting more smaller and smaller and tighter scope as you keep developing the house.
Yeah, we go from the macro to the micro. Mm-hmm. So plumbing and appliances. And then that necessitates a design review and helps you finalize those finish selections. And I think at that point, our goal really, at least by the time it's come to us, Diane's maybe working on her permit set and that's out. And we're working towards getting a pricing set of drawings together with all those selections that have cost implications connected to them, so that we can help you find a builder, a general contractor for your project.
Yeah, so we'll incorporate all of the interior selections into the final set of drawings. And sometimes that might be at a pricing set stage and it won't be a fully complete set of drawings. And we can give it to a builder and they can price it for us.
That's the moment where you have the conversation with a builder that you get much more real information, right? You can have two or three builders walk through and look at this very detailed pricing set of drawings and give you a price that's kind of an apples to apples type bid. We're not, just throwing numbers at a wall and seeing what sticks. It's all based on real selections and decisions that you've made.
And then you can see if that number works with your budget or not. Because then sometimes we might have to change some things or say, oh, we can't do that one tile we really liked. We need to do a different tile that we liked almost
She's
as much.
She's blaming the interior designer on that one. It's not the tile we have to change. It's the size. Just kidding.
Could be that too.
Could be that. Sometimes we tell clients, it's not, we can always change finish selections, can do a different tile. But the real way to kind of manage costs is probably, unfortunately, can be to cut scope on the project.
Yeah, it depends on how much you want to take out. So kind of if you need to take out probably what, 5%, you could probably do it working on finishes and kind of minor things like that. Or if you really need to cut a big chunk out, then it's definitely square footage or scope.
Cut back. So we kind of help. That's, can be a bumpy ride for people to try to get what they really want all in place. But usually we've done a good job of knowing what costs are going in. We typically know that. So we can guide people. We can design towards a certain budget if we know what that budget is. So there's not a huge amount of surprise there, costs go up and down, but that, so once we get through that, and we're part of that process, we're part of the walkthroughs with the general contractor of the space. And then when the pricing comes back, Diane sits down with her red pen and, the contractor there and kind of goes through it with the client and the contractor together to understand what the numbers mean.
Right. Yeah. And then, sometimes if the contractor will say, well, then we're not going to, why don't we take out this roof, let's say, and I'll say, no, they said they absolutely hate that roof and they have to have this other type of roof. And, I'm kind of there to help remind them of the things that they really found as a priority. Now, sometimes that can change, but I'm usually always there to keep reminding, well, here's where our priorities were. And, you know, so maybe we don't have the really big, large slider anymore. We can break it down to a smaller sliding glass door and some fixed panels of glass that still get you that same great connection.
Yeah. So it's our job on the design team to kind of still help you achieve what you wanted to achieve initially, but get it to the price point that you want it to be at. And we do our best to make sure that that happens for you. And then once we have that wonderful moment where we have said, okay, we really like this builder. He's a good fit personality-wise that we brought to the table. We've made some changes. We maybe cut back on scope or we changed some finishes to get the price where we wanted it to be. Then Diane would go in and create a construction set of drawings.
We just get the final construction set ready for the builder.
Yeah.
And going back to the pricing, I will say sometimes it comes in and everyone's good with it and they say, okay, great, let's go. So we don't always have to have those budget cut meetings.
No. It's very true. It is great when that happens.
So then once we've got the permit and the construction starts, we generally, the architect is more involved in the beginning part and then kind of steps away once you get to insulation. And then Amity, the interior designer, is a whole lot more involved all the way up to the end. Although sometimes people want the architect still there through the end, kind of, I guess I become a security blanket or something.
But yeah, I think too, another point where both the interior designer and the architect kind of come together and talk and make sure they're on the same page is when it comes to cabinet design. That goes in after the sheetrock's in. That's when they do the final measure. So you have some time once you've started building to kind of figure out exactly what you want those cabinets to be, how they'll be constructed, what material it'll be, whether it's stained wood or painted wood. Same thing with the decorative lighting. That's when that really becomes important because we've already got the electric locations in place. That's part
of
the...
Well, so we have it on the plan, but we still do a walkthrough with the homeowners to make sure they like where everything is, the switch locations, outlets. Sometimes they want to add another switch, or sometimes we end up finding, oh no, we've got a pipe there. We can't put that many switches there. We need to move switches. And that's usually a couple hours. And then I always want the interior designer there for those meetings because we need to place sconce heights and centering of pendants and chandeliers and all that kind of stuff. And it's all in the rough stages and it's hard to visualize, but we are able to, you know, foresee trying to get all that right now instead of moving it once the sheetrock's in. Once the sheetrock is in, you can move it. It just is a little more effort.
It just costs more. It takes more time. Yeah, and I think sometimes the interior designer is a little more familiar with what exact furniture the client wants to put in. And so we make sure that the pendant lands right where it needs to land over the dining table or whatever that is. So that's another collaborative moment.
Yeah, and we've had builders cut out tables out of, you know, that hardboard insulation so we can see it on site and then figure out how that relates to where the light is going to go.
It's true. Sometimes we need mock-ups. We need them to create some actual mocked-up furniture piece out of construction materials so that we can, as a team, with the client, visualize exactly how it's going to really feel. And a good builder will be able to do that and understand the importance of it, that the client needs to really understand what they're getting in the end. So we advocate for the client all the way through to make sure that happens.
Yeah. And then a lot of times I like to tape out the cabinets in the kitchen and if there's an island, because a lot of times then once you're standing in the space feeling it, you might think, oh, I want to make that a little bigger. I want to make it a little smaller. So I always make sure they do that so everyone can visualize it. And that also helps with placing the lighting too.
Absolutely. So yes, decorative lighting. And then we get into very exciting things like cabinet hardware and bath accessories and toilet paper holders and all these things that feel very far away when you've just started a project but are very important. And where are those placed? And making sure if you're going to need grab bars in the space, you have blocking in the wall for that. So having a design team to help you think all that through can actually save you in the end from having to go back and cut back into sheetrock or discover later that there's something you wanted that you didn't have an opportunity to share. You know, right now it's very popular for people to have kind of charging stations in their home, maybe mm-hmm. off the mudroom or right off the kitchen where you have a place to plug your phone or your laptop or your iPad in. So you can look at recipes or talk on the phone or watch movies. And having a location, a cabinet built for that purpose is a big deal. And sometimes people don't know that or think that through until they're standing in a framed out space.
Yeah, right. Or also in the bathroom, sometimes you can have the outlets at the back of the drawer to keep your hair dryer or curling iron or razor or whatever plugged in.
Yeah.
There's lots of things. Or like the mudroom, we've been lately putting in charging stations kind of up above where you might hang your jackets and things, so you can just put your stuff in there and charge it and walk away.
Yeah. And so I think once we get past, just to touch on briefly about the sort of decorating piece of it, once we've gotten finishes, plumbing, appliances, and then sort of specialty wall coverings, that comes into play because that relates to the builder, as does the decorative lighting and getting that placement right, like we just said, then it moves into actually ordering the furniture and making sure that we get that right. And what are the, and ordering the window treatments and making sure those come in right, whether it's a shade, a shutter, a curtain, what's the fabric going to be. Then it comes time to do tile layout discussions when the tile installers on site. Typically the drawings, the architectural drawings will have some indication of finishes at times, but a lot of times it's the interior designer who does the tile layouts. And sometimes that'll even change when we're in the field and on the site and trying to figure out exactly how those tiles are going to be placed. Then it's the grout, the cabinet hardware, and the paint and stain colors. All of that happens in the field. So that's always a lot of fun, but it can be overwhelming if you don't have guidance.
Yeah, a lot of times we have our clients say, oh, we're so glad you're here. Yeah. Thank you for being here.
It's a lot. Area rugs, fabric, pillows, pillow trim, art and accessories. So we do all of that. That's kind of the order that it goes in. But, you know, it's something that you have to plan for and know all of in advance. But it doesn't all have to be decided at the same time. So it's kind of one of the things that as a professionals we can bring you is the framework, the layout of how we do things to make sure that every decision that is really important to get made gets made in a timely fashion to keep the project on track.
Mm-hmm. Oh, another one is that we didn't talk about was the air conditioning and heating.
I always do
a big walkthrough with the subcontractor about where all the supplies and returns are going to go. And sometimes those can be a long time because I don't want it to go where they want it to go because it won't look nice. So
yeah, Diane,
sometimes we have to.
Diane gets into fisticuffs with HVAC folks who want to make the ceiling ugly with a
big giant return
in the middle of the ceiling.
And so. I know it's probably the best place energy efficient wise, but it really doesn't look good.
Yeah.
So
it all has to balance out in the end. And so all that just to say that really these things seem, maybe they don't seem small. None of them are really small in the end. All of these little details come together well to make a house really feel special and custom and doesn't have to be fancy. It can be. We like when it's fancy too, but if it's thoughtful, that's what really matters.
Yeah, that kind of talks about the process once you, from design through construction. So that kind of gives you a quick summary.
Yeah. And then we come over and have coffee with you or wine and look at our work and celebrate together.
Enjoy the space.
All right, Diane, what are we going to talk about next?
So we have some questions for the Oracle.
Great. Oh, great.
So here's one. I have a huge open concept living dining kitchen space, and I have no clue what to do. How do you make giant rooms feel cozy?
That's an issue with a lot of houses these days that are built with great rooms in them. And they're great for communication and light and airflow, and they're not as great for feeling really tucked into your space and kind of finding ways to create architecture using furniture is one solution that's really useful for us. So we just kind of think of your sofa or your chairs or a bookcase as creating its own little zones in those spaces.
And area rugs.
Area rugs are a big one. Yeah, that's a good one. Yes, we take area rugs and we kind of delineate spaces in that way, create a little island for all of the furniture to live on. You know, we recently had a client who had a big open space but they wanted a little library feel. So we just built a cabinet that's attached on the wall on one side and then turns the corner on the other and projects out into the room. And we created a corner in the room, just a built-in. Then the reading chair goes there with a light next to it and the right area rug and a little place to put your glass of wine down. Voila, you have a library space. So I think using architecture that way, also lighting, I think putting decorative lighting in unique spots that create little zones. So maybe it's a pendant fixture that drops down over a game table. So you have a spot for your kids to play Legos or for you to sit and have a glass of wine. And maybe that's in the living room and it becomes a game table zone and you can still see the television from there. And then you've got the seating area by the television. And so it's about area rugs, architecture. And then another big feature, a thing to do is decorative walls. Kind of a pierced open wall that blocks a little bit of the view from one side of the room to the other, but doesn't block the airflow or make it feel closed off. And there's a lot of beautiful decorative ways to do that.
So you're kind of making these scalable, cozy spaces within this one big space.
Yeah, sort of thinking of it as a bunch of different rooms, pretending the walls are there, building it that way, and then taking the walls out at the last minute.
What types of additions and architectural upgrades will give me the greatest return on my property investment? We do get that question a lot while talking in the early stages of design. And I mean, definitely kitchens. I think we all know that.
Kitchen is king for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whether it's we're able to move walls, put in bigger windows, or if you're just updating the cabinets and finishes to make it feel better, I think definitely is totally worth the investment.
Yeah, I think some of it depends on where you are in the country and what you're, what people are concerned with in that particular area. I know in some places it's less important because people are tearing houses down, but a lot of times people don't even care whether or not it's to their taste that something has been done. The kitchen and the master bathroom are big ones that kind of need to have been addressed and updated to some extent before people will feel comfortable buying that space. Partially, I think, because, Diane, I don't know if you'd agree, the systems in the house, like the HVAC, if it's up to date, if the roof is good, if the plumbing has been addressed.
I'd also say the front door that has a lot of it kind of just gives you an immediate opinion about your house. Here's your front door. So changing your front door, and that's not too expensive to do.
Yeah, I think we found out once when we were talking with some realtors and done some studies on the houses that sell better than others have doors that are painted a dark color, I think was what they said.
Oh, was
black.
It? Yeah.
But anyway, that's just an interesting thing to think about is kind of upgrading your front door.
And I would say going back to the master bath is, you know, kind of trends of master baths have changed over the years. I mean, if you look at a 90s bath, they had the 3x3 shower plus the jetted tub. Hardly anyone wants a jetted tub anymore, and no one wants a 3x3 shower. They all want a much bigger shower. And some people don't even want tubs anymore. So, you know, and then if you look at the houses of the 50s, tinier shower, tiny sink, tiny toilet, usually pink or baby blue, right? So, you know, definitely keeping with the trends and updating master baths are always worth it, I think.
Yeah, I don't think you have to do trends in every area of your house, but making sure that the trends have been addressed to some extent, even with a light hand in a master bathroom or in a kitchen, I think that's really important.
And then the other best part is you will be using it all the time, the kitchen and the master bath. So you're putting money into something you're going to be using all the time.
Yeah, it's always sad to me when people update their house and then sell it immediately. They've only updated it to sell instead of getting the pleasure out of having the nice new spaces for themselves. So,
yeah.
And I also think windows can make a big difference.
Yeah, definitely windows. I could get on a soapbox about windows.
Yeah.
We'll do that in another podcast.
That's another podcast. Exactly. What else we got?
We need more space in our home, but I'm hesitant that an addition will look like an afterthought. I've seen houses with converted garages or patios, and they always have an awkward step down, and the exteriors often lack style and cohesion with the original home. How do you design an addition that flows well?
Okay, so I feel really passionately about that one, so I'll go first, although I think it's more of an architectural question, really, but so important that, in my opinion, that houses make sense. kind of as a whole, but that doesn't mean you have to stick with one particular style. Whether you go more contemporary on an older home or try to be in keeping with the existing architecture, it can be done well if the build out is done well and the details about where the connections happen are done well. And a lot of that's about transitions, right, Diane? Like mm-hmm. the step up and the step down.
Yeah, definitely. You'd want to get rid of that and just, you know, either you raise the floor with wood sleepers or pour concrete, whichever is going to work the best for the space. And definitely don't want to have the step downs. Plus, they're a trip hazard.
I would say that one of the most important things is to definitely have a professional when you're doing an addition. Have a good architect relationship and a really good builder for making sure that, you know, the level of the build out on the existing house is taken into account with the new, with the addition, or improving all both at the same time. And because there's a lot of times that, you know, particularly in places where the housing prices are going up really high, sometimes the existing architecture of the house is not even where it needs to be. And so you're adding on something that's maybe even a little nicer than the house that's existing there. Mm-hmm. So kind of not being shy about making sure that those connections get upgraded together to some extent. You may not have to rip the whole thing down, but making sure you address it at the same time so that it doesn't feel like one was done at a different time than the other. But I think that's a really nuanced thing that's important.
Yeah, I had a client actually who lives around the corner from me. And when I first met with her, she said, well, you're not going to design something that looks bad, are you? And I said, no,
hopefully not.
That's not my intention. Plus, I'm going to drive by it every day. So
yeah.
We really, it was kind of a little post-war or 1950s house. And we added a kitchen and a master suite, and it came out really nice, and it all flows very well together. We also replaced all the windows, so all the windows looked the same. And so we kind of, you know, kept that cohesion.
Yeah, I think it's just about being really thoughtful.
The materials.
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. it's about being thoughtful, finding the right type of builder, and making sure that you're not just trying to just add space. You want to make sure that whatever you add on is proportionately similar. Maybe the size of the rooms, there's some at least connection that feels similar to the original house. Whether or not you blow out other areas and go more contemporary, that connection part really needs to kind of be married well.
Thank you for listening to Design Oracles with Amity Worrell, owner of Amity Worrell & Company, and Diane Kett, owner of DK Studio, and together, partners at Amity Kett.